bulbs under your lady's nose, then say your name, and she will find your charms irresistible and become overwhelmed with desire for you," explained Sage.
"Redundant, then, really," said I with a grin. The hags laughed themselves into a wheeze around, then Rosemary dropped the puffballs into a small silk pouch and handed it to me.
"There's the matter of payment," said she, as I reached for the purse.
"I'm a poor fool," said I. "All we have between us is my scepter and a well-used shoulder of pork. I suppose I could wait while each of you takes Kent for a roll in the hay, if that will do."
"You will not," said Kent.
The hag held up a hand.
"A price to be named later," said she, "whenever we ask."
"Fine, then," said I, snatching the purse away from her.
"Swear it," she said.
"I swear," said I.
"In blood."
But as quick as a cat, she scratched the back of my hand with her ragged talon.
Ouch!
Blood welled in the crease.
"Let it drip in the cauldron and swear," said the crone.
I did as I was told. "Since I'm here, is there any chance I could get a monkey?"
"No,"
said Sage.
"No,"
said Parsley.
"No,"
said Rosemary.
"We're all out of monkeys. But we'll put a glamour on your mate so his disguise isn't so bloody pathetic."
"Go to it, then," said I. "We must be off." How sharper than a serpent's tooth it is to have a thankless child. King Lear, Act 1, Scene 4. 10. All your dread pleasures. The sky threatened a dismal dawn as we reached Castle Albany. The drawbridge was up.
"Who goes there?" shouted the sentry.
"'Tis Lear's fool, Pocket, and his man-at-arms, Caius." Caius is the name the witches gave Kent to use to bind his disguise. They'd cast a glamour on him. His beard and hair were now jet black, as if by nature, not soot. His face lean and weathered, only his eyes, as brown and gentle as a moo cow's, showed the real Kent. I advised him to pull down the wide brim of his hat should we encounter old acquaintances.
"Where in the bloody hell have you been?" asked the sentry.
He signalled and the bridge ground down.
"The old king's nearly torn the county apart looking for you. Accused our lady of tying a rock to you and casting you into the North Sea, he did. Seems a spot of bother. I must have grown in her esteem. Just last night she was only going to hang me."
"Last night?
You drunken sot, we've been looking for you for a month."
I looked at Kent, and he at me, then we at the sentry.
"A month? Bloody witches," said Kent under his breath. "If you turn up, we're to take you to our lady immediately," said the sentry.
"Oh, please do, gentle guard. Your lady does so love seeing me at first light." The sentry scratched his beard and seemed to be thinking.
"Well spoken, fool. Perhaps you lot could do with some breakfast and a wash-up before I take you to my lady."
The drawbridge thumped into place. I led Kent across, and the sentry met us by the inner gate.
"Begging your pardon, sir," the sentry said, directing his speech to Kent. "You wouldn't mind waiting until 8 bells to reveal the fool's return, would you?" "That when you're off watch, lad?" "Aye, sir. I'm not sure I want to be the bearer of the joyous news of the wayward fool's arrival. The king's knights have been raising rabble round the castle for a fortnight, and I've heard our lady cursing the black fool as part of the cause."
"Blamed even in my absence," said I.
"I told you, Caius, she adores me."
Kent patted the sentry on the shoulder.
"We'll escort ourselves, lad, and tell your lady we came to the gate with the merchants in the morning. Now, back to your post." "Thank you, good sir, but for your rough clothes I'd take you for a gentleman." "But for my clothes I'd be one," said Kent, his grin a dazzle amid his newly black beard.
"Oh, for fuck's sake, would you two just have a gobble on each other's knob and be done with it?" said I.
The two soldiers leapt back as if each was on fire.
"Sorry, just having you on," said I, as I breezed by them and into the castle.
"You pufters are such a sensitive lot."
"I'm not a pufter," said Kent, as we approached Goneril's chambers.
Mid-morning. The time in between allowed us to eat, wash, do some writing, and ascertain that we had, indeed, been gone for over a month, despite it seeming only overnight to us. Perhaps that was the hag's payment, to extract a month from our lives in exchange for the spells, potions, and prognostication. It seemed a fair price, but bloody complicated to explain. Oswald sat at a scribe's desk outside the Duchess's chambers. I laughed and wagged Jones under his nose.
"Still guarding the door like a common footman, then, Oswald? Oh, the years have been good to you."
Oswald wore only a dagger at his belt, no sword, but his hand fell to it as he stood. Kent dropped his hand to his sword and shook his head gravely. Oswald sat back down on his stool.
"I'll have you know that I'm both steward and chamberlain, as well as trusted advisor to the Duchess."
"A veritable quiver of titles she's given you to sling. Tell me, do you still answer to Toady and Catchfart, or are those titles only honorary now?"
"All better than common fool," Oswald spat.
"True, I am a fool, and also true I am common, but I am no common fool, Catchfart. I am the Black Fool. I have been sent for, and I shall be given entry to your lady's chambers while you, fool, sit by the door. Announce me." I believe Oswald growled then, a new trick he'd learned since the old days. He'd always tried to cast my title as an insult, and boiled that I took it as a tribute. Would he ever understand that he found favour with Goneril not because of his grovelling or devotion, but because he was so easily humiliated?
Good, I suppose, that he'd learned to growl, beaten-down dog that he was. He stormed through the heavy door, then returned a minute later. He would not look me in the eye. "My lady will see you now," he said, "but only you. This ruffian can wait in the kitchen."
"Wait here, ruffian," said I to Kent, "and make some effort not to bugger poor Oswald here, no matter how he should beg for it."
"I'm not a pufter," said Kent.
"Not with this villain you're not," said I. "His bum is property of the princess."
"I'll see you hanged, fool," said Oswald.
"Aroused by the thought, are you, Oswald?"
"No matter. You'll not have my ruffian. Adieu."
Then I was through the doors and into Goneril's chambers. Goneril sat to the back of a great round room. Her quarters were housed in a full tower of the castle, three floors. This hall for meeting and business. Another floor above it would have rooms for her ladies, her wardrobe, bathing and dressing. The top would be where she slept and played, if she still played.
"Do you still play, Pumpkin?"
I asked. I danced a tight-step jig and bowed. Goneril waved her ladies away.
"Pocket, I'll have you..."
"Oh, I know. Hanged at dawn, head on a pike, guts for garters, drawn and quartered, impaled, disemboweled, beaten and made into bangers and mash. All your dread pleasures visited on me with glorious cruelty. All stipulated, lady, duly noted and taken as truth. Now, how may a humble fool serve before his hour of doom descends?"
She twisted up her lip as if to snarl, then burst out laughing and quickly looked around to make sure that no one saw her.
"I will, you know, you horrible wicked little man."
"Wicked?
Moi?"
said I in perfect fucking French.
"Tell no one," she said.
It had always been that way with Goneril. Her "tell no one," however, applied only to me, not to her, I had found out.
"Pocket,"
she once said, brushing her red-gold hair near a window where it caught the sun and seemed to shine as if from within. She was perhaps 17 then, and had gotten in the habit of calling me to her chambers several times a week and questioning me mercilessly.
"Pocket, I'm to be married soon, and I'm mystified by man-bits. I've heard them described, but that's not helping."
"Ask a nurse. Isn't she supposed to teach you about such things?"
"Auntie's a nun and married to Jesus, a virgin."
"You don't say. She went to the wrong bloody convent, then."
"I need to talk to a man, but not a proper man.
You are like one of those fellows that Saracens have look over the harems.
A eunuch?
See? You are worldly and know of things. I need to see your willy.
Pardon? What? Why?
Because I've never seen one, and I don't want to seem naive on my wedding night when the depraved brute ravages me.
How do you know he's a depraved brute?
Auntie told me.
All men are. Now, out with your willy, fool.
Why my willy?
There's willies aplenty you can look at. What about Oswald? He may even have one.
Or knows where you can get hold of one, I'll wager.
Oswald was a footman then.
I know, but this is my first, and yours will be small and not so frightening. It's like when I was learning to ride, and first father gave me a pony, but then, as I got older...
All right then, shut up. Here.
Oh, would you look at that?
What?
That's it then.
Yes. What?
Nothing really to be afraid of then, was there? I don't know what all the fuss is about. It's rather pitiful, if you ask me.
It is not.
Are they all this small?
Most are smaller, in fact.
May I touch it?
If you feel you must.
Well, would you look at that?
See? Now you've angered it.
Where in God's name have you been?
She said.
Father's been a madman looking for you. He and his captain have gone out on patrol every day and well into the evening, leaving the rest of his knights to wreak havoc on the castle. My lord has sent soldiers as far as Edinburgh asking after you. I should have you drowned for all the worry you've caused.
You did miss me, didn't you? I cradled the silk purse at my belt, wondering when best to spring the spell. And once she was bewitched, how exactly would I use the power?
He was supposed to be in Regan's care, but by the time he moves his bloody 100 knights all the way to Cornwall, it will be my turn again. I can't abide the rabble in my palace.
What does Lord Albany say?
He says what I tell him to say.
It's all intolerable.
Gloucester, said I, offering the very model of a non sequitur wrapped in an enigma.
Gloucester?
Asked the Duchess.
The King's good friend is there. It's midway between here and Cornwall. And the Earl of Gloucester daren't deny the request of the dukes of both Albany and Cornwall. You wouldn't be leaving the King without care, yet you wouldn't have him underfoot either. With the witch's warning about Drool in danger there, I was determined for all the drama to descend on Gloucester. I sat down on the floor near her feet, held Jones across my knees, and waited, both I and the puppet wearing jolly grins.
Gloucester, said Goneril, letting a bit of a smile seep out. She really could be lovely when she forgot she was cruel.
Gloucester, said Jones, the dog's bollocks of Western bloody blighty.
Do you think he'll agree to it? It's not how he laid out his legacy.
He won't agree to Gloucester, but he'll agree to go to Regan's by way of Gloucester. The rest will be up to your sister.
Should I have felt myself a traitor?
No. The old man brought this on himself.
But if he doesn't agree, and he has all these men...
She looked me in the eye now.
It's too much power in the hands of the feeble.
And yet he had all the power of the kingdom not 2 months ago.
You've not seen him, Pocket. The legacy and banishment of Cordelia and Kent was just the beginning. Since you went away, he's gotten worse. He searches for you. He hunts. He rails about his days as a soldier of Christ 1 minute, then calls to the gods of nature the next. With a fighting force of that size, if he should feel that we've betrayed him...
Take them, said I.
What? I couldn't.
You have seen my apprentice, Drool. He eats with his hands or with a spoon. We dare not let him have a knife or fork, lest the points imperil all.
Don't be obtuse, Pocket. What of father's knights?
You pay them.
Take them.
For his own good. Lear with his train of knights is like a child running with a sword. Are you cruel to relieve him of deadly force when he is neither strong enough nor wise enough to wield it? Tell Lear he must dismiss 50 of his knights and their attendants and keep them here. Tell him they will be at his beck and call when he is in residence.
50? Just 50? You must leave some for your sister. Send Oswald to Cornwall with your plan. Have Regan and Cornwall make haste to Gloucester so they are there upon Leah's arrival. Perhaps they can bring Gloucester into the fold. With Leah's knights dismissed, the two Whitebeards can reminisce about their glory days and crawl together to the grave in peaceful nostalgia.
Yes!
Goneril was becoming breathless now, excited. I'd seen it before. It wasn't always a good sign. Quickly, said I, send Oswald to Regan while the sun is high.
No.
Goneril sat forward, her bosom nearly spilling out of her gown, which captured my attention more than her fingernails digging into my arm. What? Said I, the bells of my coxcomb but a finger's breadth from jingling her décolletage.
There is no peace for Lear in Gloucester.
Haven't you heard? The Earl's son, Edgar, is a traitor. Had I heard? Had I heard? Of course. The bastard's plan was afoot. Of course, lady. Where do you think I've been?
You've been all the way to Gloucester?
She was panting now. Aye, and back. I've brought you something.
A present?
She showed the delighted, wide, grey-green eyes she'd had when she was a girl.
Perhaps I won't hang you.
But punishment is due, you Pocket. Then the lady grabbed me and pulled me across her lap, face down. Jones rolled to the floor beside me.
Lady, perhaps... Smack. There, fool. I've hit it, hit it, hit it, hit it. So give it, give it, give it.
A smack with every iron.
Bloody hell, you insane tart!
I squirmed. My ass burned with her handprint. Smack.
Oh, good God, said Goneril. Yes.
She wiggled under me now. Smack.
Ouch! It's a letter,
said I.
I'll see your little bum as red as a rose.
Smack. I squirmed in her lap, turned, grabbed her bosoms and pulled myself upright until I was sitting in her lap. Here. I pulled the sealed parchment out of my jerkin and held it out.
Not yet,
said she, trying to roll me over and get back to smacking my bum.
She honked my codpiece.
You honked my codpiece?
Aye, give it up, fool.
She tried to get a hand under my codpiece. I reached into the silk purse and retrieved one of the puffballs as I tried to keep my manhood out of her grasp. I heard a door open.
Surrender the willy,
said the Duchess. She had it then. There was nothing I could do. I squoze the puffball under her nose. It's from Edmund of Gloucester, said I.
Milady, said Oswald, who was standing in the doorway.
Let us down, pumpkin, said I. The catchfart needs his task set. It all smacked of history. The game had progressed further that first day, when Oswald first interrupted us, all those years ago. But it had begun, as always, with one of Goneril's query sessions.
Pocket, said she, since you were raised in an abbey, I should think you know much about punishment.
Aye, lady. I had my share, and it didn't end there. I still endure an inquisition almost daily in these very chambers.
Gentle Pocket, surely you jest.
That is part of the job, mum. She stood then, and dismissed the ladies from her solo with a minor tantrum. When they were gone, she said,
I've never been punished.
Aye, lady, well, you're Christian. There's always time. I'd left the church with a curse after they'd walled up my anchors, and I was leaning heavily pagan at the time.
No one is allowed to strike me, so there's always been a girl to take my punishment for me, my spankings.
Aye, mum, as it should be. Spare the royal withers and all.
And I feel funny about it. Just last week I mentioned during Mass that Regan might be a bit of a cunt, and my whipping girl was soundly spanked for it.
Might as well have whipped her for your calling the sky blue, eh? A beating for talking truth. Of course you felt funny about it.
Not that kind of funny, Pocket. Funny like when you taught me about the little man in the boat.
It had been a verbal lesson only, shortly after she'd insisted I teach her about manly bits. But it had kept her amused on and off for a fortnight.
Oh, of course, said I. Funny.
I need to be spanked, said Goneril.
A constant, I'd agree, lady. But again, we're declaring the sky blue, aren't we?
I want to be spanked.
Oh, said I, eloquent and quick-witted rascal that I am.
That's different.
By you,
said the princess.
Fuckstockings!
I thus declared my doom. Well, by the time Oswald came into the room that first time, both the princess and I were as red-bottomed as Barbary monkeys, quite naked except for my hat, which Goneril had donned, and administering rhythmically to each other's front sides. Oswald was somewhat less than discreet about it all.
"Alarm! Alarm! My lady is ravaged by a fool! Alarm!"
said Oswald, fleeing from the room to raise the alarm through the castle. I caught up to Oswald as he entered the great hall, where Lear was sitting on his throne, Regan sitting at his feet to one side, doing needlepoint, Cordelia at the other playing with a doll.
"The fool has violated the princess!"
Oswald announced.
"Pocket!"
said Cordelia, dropping her doll and running to my side, sporting a great, goofy grin. She was perhaps 8 then. Oswald stepped in front of me.
"I found the fool rutting the Princess Goneril like a rapacious goat, sire."
"'Tis not true, Nuncle," said I. "I was called to the lady's solar this morning only to jest her out of a morning funk, which can be smelt upon her breath if you have doubts." At that point, Goneril came running into the room, trying to arrange her skirts as she moved. She stopped beside me and curtsied before her father. She was breathless, barefoot, and one breast peeked cyclopean out the bodice of her gown. I snatched my coxcomb off her head with a jingle and concealed it behind my back.
"There, fresh as a flower," said I.
"Hello, sister," said Cordelia. "Morning, lamb,"
said Goneril, blindfolding the pink-eyed cyclops with a quick tuck. Lear scratched his beard and glared at his eldest daughter.
"What ho, daughter?" said he. "Hast thou shagged a fool?"
"Methinks any wench who shags a man hath shagged a fool, father."
"That was a distinct no," said I.
"What is shagged?"
asked Cordelia.
"I saw it," said Oswald.
"Shag a man and shag a fool. One is the same as the other," said Goneril. "But this morning I have your fool shagged. Righteous and rowdy. I bonked him until he cried out for gods and horses to pull me off."
What was this? Was she hoping for more punishment?
"That is so," said Oswald. "I heard the call."
"Shagged, shagged, shagged," said Goneril. "Oh, what is this I feel? Tiny bastard fools stirring in my womb. I can hear their tiny bells."
"You lying tart," said I. "A fool is no more born with bells than a princess with fangs. Both must be earned." Lear said,
"If that were true, Pocket, I'd have a halberd run up your bum."
"You can't kill Pocket," said Cordelia. "I'll need him to cheer me when I'm visited by the red curse, and a horrible melancholy comes over me,"
said Cordelia. "What are you on about, child?" said I.
"All women get it," said Cordelia. "They must be punished for Eve's treachery in the Garden of Evil. Nurse says it makes you ever so miserable."
I patted the child's head. "For fuck's sake, sire, you've got to get the girls some teachers who aren't nuns."
"I should be punished," said Goneril.
"I've had my curse for simply months," said Regan, not even bothering to look up from a needlepoint.
"I find that if I go to the dungeon and have some prisoners tortured, I feel better." "No, I want my pocket,"
said Cordelia, starting to whine now.
"You can't have him," said Goneril. "He's to be punished too, after what he's done."
Oswald bowed for no particular reason.
"May I suggest his head on a pike on the London Bridge, sire, to discourage any more debauchery?"
"Silence," said Lear. Standing.
He came down the steps, walked past Oswald, who fell to his knees, and stood before me. He put his hand on Cordelia's head. The old king locked his hawk's gaze upon me.
"She didn't speak for 3 years before you came," he said.
"Aye, sire," said I, looking down. He turned to Goneril.
Go to your quarters. Have your nurse tend to your illusions. She will see that there is no issue from it.
But, Father, the fool and I...
Nonsense! You're a maid, said Lear. We have agreed to deliver you thus to the Duke of Albany, and so it is true. Sire, the lady has been violated, said Oswald, desperate now. Guards, take Oswald to the bailey and flog him 20 lashes for lying. But, sire...
Oswald squirmed as 2 guards seized his arms.
20 lashes to show my mercy. Another word of this, ever, and your head will decorate London Bridge.
We watched, stunned, as the guards dragged Oswald away, the unctuous footman weeping and red-faced from trying to hold his tongue.
May I go watch?
Goneril asked.
Go, Lear said, then to your nurse.
Regan was on her feet now, and had skipped to her father's side. She looked at him, hopefully, up on her toes, clapping her hands lightly in anticipation.
Yes, go, said the king, but you may only watch.
Regan streamed out of the hall after her older sister, her raven hair flying behind her like a dark comet.
You're my fool, Pocket, said Cordelia, taking my hand. Come, help me. I'm teaching Dolly to speak French.
The little princess led me away. The old king watched us go without another word, one white eyebrow raised and his hawk eye burning under it like a distant frozen star. XI. A sweet and bitter fool. Goneril dumped me on the floor as if she'd suddenly found a bag of drowned kittens in her lap. She snapped open the letter and began reading without even bothering to tuck her bosoms back into a gown.
"Milady," said Oswald again.
He'd learned from that first whipping. He acted as if he didn't even see me.
"Your father is in the Great Hall, asking after his fool."
Goneril looked up, irritated.
"Well then, take him. Take him, take him, take him."
She waved us away like flies.
"Very well, milady."
Oswald turned on his heel and marched away.
"Come, fool."
I stood and rubbed my bum as I followed Oswald out of the solar. Yes, my backside was bruised, but there was a pain in my heart as well.
What a bitter bitch to cast me out while my bum still burned with the blows of her passion.
The bells on my coxcomb drooped in despair. Kent fell in beside me in the hall.
"So, is she smitten with you?"
"With Edmund of Gloucester," said I.
"Edmund? She's smitten with the bastard?"
"Aye, the fickle whore," said I. Kent looked startled and folded back the brim of his hat to better see me.
"But you bewitched her to do so, didn't you?"
"Oh, yes, I suppose I did," said I. "So, she was only immune to my charms by means of dark and powerful magic." "Ha!" I felt better. "She reads the letter I forged in his hand even now."
"Your fool," Oswald announced as we entered the hall.
The old king was there, with Captain Curran, and 12 other knights who looked like they'd just returned from the hunt, for me, no doubt.
"My boy," Lear called, throwing his arms wide.
I walked into his embrace, but did not return it. I found no tenderness in my heart at the sight of him, but my anger boiled still.
"Oh, joy," said Oswald, his disdain dripping like venom in his voice. "The prodigal git returns." "See here," said Lear. "My men have yet to be paid. Tell my daughter I will see her."
Oswald did not acknowledge the old man, but kept walking.
"You, sir," roared the king. "Did you hear me?"
Oswald turned slowly, as if he'd heard his name carried in faintly on the wind.
I heard you. Do you know who I am?"
Oswald picked a front tooth with the nail of his small finger.
"Aye, milady's father."
He smirked. The rascal had cheek, that I will give him. That, or a burning desire to be catapulted cod over cap into the afterlife.
"Your lady's father?
Leah pulled off his heavy leather hunting gauntlet and backhanded it across Oswald's face.
"You knave! You horse and dog! You slave! You cur!"
The metal studs on Leah's glove were beginning to draw blood where they struck Oswald.
"I am none of these things. I will not be struck by you."
Oswald was backing toward the great double doors as Leah worried at him with the glove. But when the steward turned to run, Kent threw out a leg and swept him off his feet.
"Or tripped neither, you tosser," said Kent.
Oswald rolled into a heap at the foot of one of Goneril's guards, then scrambled to his feet and ran out. The guards pretended they'd seen nothing.
"Well done, friend," said Leah to Kent. "Are you the one who brought my fool home?"
"Aye, he is, Nuncle," said I. "Rescued me from the darkest heart of the forest, fought off brigands, pygmies, and a brace of tigers to bring me here. But don't let him talk his Welsh at you. One tiger was vanquished in a sluice of phlegm and mortally beaten with consonants." Leah looked closely now at his old friend, then shivered, guilt's chill claws scuttling across his spine, no doubt.
"Welcome, then, sir. I thank thee."
Leah handed Kent a small purse of coin.
"Earnest payment for your service."
"My thanks and my sword," said Kent, bowing.
"What is your name?" asked Leah.
"Caius," said Kent.
"And whence do you hail?"
"From Bonking, sire."
"Well, yes, lad, as do we all," said Leah. "But from what town?"
"Bonking you on Worm's Head," I offered with a shrug. "Wales."
"Fine, then. Join my train," said Leah. "You're hired."
"Oh, and allow me to hire you as well," said I, removing my hat and handing it to Kent with a jingle.
"What's this?" asked Kent.
"Who but a fool would work for a fool?"
"Watch your tongue, boy," said Leah.
"You will have to get your own hat, fool," said I to the king. "Mine is already promised." Captain Curran turned to conceal a smile.
"You call me a fool?"
"Oh, should I not call you a fool? All your other titles you've given away, along with your land."
"I'll have you whipped."
I rubbed my burning bottom. "That is the only legacy you have left, Nuncle."
"You've become a bitter fool in your absence," said the king.
"And you the sweet one," said I, "the fool who makes a jest of his own fate."
"The boy is not altogether fool," said Kent.
Leah turned on the old knight, but not in anger.
"Perhaps," said he, weakly, his eye drifting to the stones of the floor as if searching for an answer there. "Perhaps."
"The Lady Goneril, Duchess of Albany," announced one of the guards.
"Craven Hose Beast," I added, relatively certain the guard would forget that part. Goneril breezed into the room, no notice of me. She went right to her father. The old man opened his arms, but she stopped short, a sword length away.
"Did you strike my man for chiding your fool?"
Now she scowled at me. I rubbed my bum and blew her a kiss. Oswald peeked through the doors to the hall, as if waiting for the answer.
"I struck the knave for being impudent. I but asked him to fetch you. My fool has only just returned from being lost. This is not a time for frowns, daughter."
"There are no smiles for you, sire," said I. "Not now that you've nothing to offer. The lady has only bile for fools and those with no title at all."
"Quiet, boy," said the king.
"You see," said Goneril. "Not just your all-licensed fool, but your whole train treats my palace like a tavern and a brothel. They fight and eat all day, drink and carouse all night, and you care for nothing but your precious fool."
"As it should be,"
said Jones, albeit softly. When royal ire is raging, even the spittle sprayed from the lips can rain down death on the common puppet or person.
"I care for much, and my men are the best in the land, and they have not been paid since we left London. Perhaps if you..."
"They will not be paid," said Goneril. And suddenly all the knights in the hall came to attention.
When I gave you all, 'twas on the condition of you maintaining my retinue, daughter.
Aye, father, and they shall be maintained, but not in your charge, and not in their full number.
Leah was growing red-faced now, and shaking with anger as with palsy.
Speak clearly, daughter. These old ears deceive.
Now Goneril went to her father and took his hand. Yes, father, you are old. Very old. Really, really, extraordinarily, mind-bogglingly. She turned to me for a cue.
Dog-fuckingly, I suggested.
Dog-fuckingly old, said the Duchess. You are feebly, incontinently, desiccatedly, smelling of boiled cabbagely old. You are brain-rottingly, balls-draggingly...
I'm fucking old, said Leah.
We'll stipulate that, said I.
And, continued Goneril, while you, in your dotage, should be revered for your wisdom and grace, you piss on your legacy and reputation by keeping this train of ruffians. They are too much for you.
They are my loyal men, and you have agreed to maintain them.
And I shall. I shall pay your men. But half will stay here at Albany, under my charge, under my orders, in soldiers' quarters, not running around the bailey like marauders.
Darkness and devils, cursed Leah. It shall not be. Curran, saddle my horses. Call my train together. I have another daughter.
Go to her, then, said Goneril. You strike my servants, and your rabble makes servants of their betters. Be gone, then. But half your train shall remain.
Prepare my horses, said Leah.
Curran hurried out of the hall, followed by the other knights, passing the Lord Albany as he entered, the Duke looking more than somewhat confused.
"Why does the King's captain exit with such urgency?" asked the Duke.
"Do you know of this harpy's intent to strip me of my train?"
asked Leah.
"This is the first I've heard of it," said Albany. "Pray, be patient, sire."
"My lady?"
Albany looked to Goneril.
"We do not strip him of his knights. I have offered to maintain them here, with our own force, while father goes on to my sister's castle. We shall treat his men as our own, with discipline, as soldiers, not as guests and revellers. They are out of the old man's control."
Albany turned back to Leah and shrugged.
"She lies," said Leah,
now wagging a finger under Goneril's nose.
"Thou detested viper, thou ungrateful fiend, thou hideous,
slag," I offered. "Thou piteous prick-pull, thou vainglorious virago, thou skunk-breathed liquor of dog scrotums. Do jump in, Albany, I can't go on forever, no matter how inspired. Surely you've years of suppressed resentment to vent. Thou leprous spunk-catch, thou worm-eaten..."
"Shut up, fool," said Leah.
"Sorry, sirrah, I thought you were losing your momentum."
"How could I have given preference to this villainess over my sweet Cordelia?" asked Leah.
"Doubtless that question was lost worse in the wood than I, seeing as it has only caught up with you now, sire. Shall we take cover against the impact of the revelation that you've awarded your kingdom to the best liars of your loins?"
Who would have thought it?
But I'd felt more charity toward the old man before he realized his folly. Now...
He turned his eyes skyward, and began to invoke the gods.
"Hear me, nature, dear goddess, hear. Convey sterility onto this creature. Dry up her womb, and never let a babe spring from her body to honour her. Instead, create in her a child of spleen and bile. Let it torment her, and stamp wrinkles in her youthful brow. Let it turn all of her mother's benefits to laughter and contempt, that she may feel how sharper than a serpent's tooth it is to have a thankless child."
With that, the old man spat at Goneril's feet and stormed out of the hall.
"I think he took that as well as could be reasonably expected," said I.
I was ignored, despite my positive tone and sunny smile.
"Oswald!"
called Goneril.
The smarmy steward slithered forth.
"Quickly, take the letter to my sister and Cornwall. Take two of the fastest horses and alternate them. Do not rest until it is in her hand, and then take you to Gloucester and deliver that other message as well.
You have given me no other message, lady, said the worm.
Yes, right. Come with me. We shall draft a letter.
She led Oswald out of the great hall, leaving the Duke of Albany looking to me for some sort of explanation. I shrugged.
She can be a whirlwind of tits and terror when she puts her mind to a purpose, can't she, sir?
Albany didn't seem to notice my comment. Somewhat forlorn he looked. His beard seemed to be greying with worry as he stood there.
I don't approve of her treatment of the king. The old man has earned more respect. And what of these messages to Cornwall and Gloucester?
I started to speak, thinking it a perfect opportunity to mention her newfound affection for Edmund of Gloucester, my recent session of bawdy discipline with the Duchess, and a half-dozen metaphors for illicit shagging that had come to mind while the Duke mused, when Jones said,
"Sex and cuckoldry, you've mastered those jokes. For a more challenging jape, a new seal should be broke."
"What?" said I. Whenever Jones has spoken before, it has been in my own voice. Smaller and muted sometimes from the art of throwing it, but my voice alone, unless Drool is mimicking the puppet. And it is I who works the little ring and string that move Jones's mouth. But this was not my voice, and I had not moved the puppet. It was the voice of the girl ghost from the White Tower.
"Don't be tedious, Pocket," said Albany. "I've no patience for puppets and rhymes."
Jones said,
"A thousand rough nights to call the lady a whore. Only today may a fool jest the land into war."
And like a shooting star cutting brilliant across the ignorant night of my mind, I saw the ghost's meaning. I said, "I know not what the lady sends to Cornwall, good Albany, but while I was this last month in Gloucester, I heard soldiers talk of Cornwall and Regan gathering forces by the sea."
"Gathering an army? Whatever for? With gentle Cordelia and Geoff now on the throne in France, it would be folly to cross the Channel. We've a safe ally there."
"Oh, they aren't gathering forces against France. They are gathering forces against you, my lord. Regan would be queen of all of Britain, or so I heard said."
"You heard this from soldiers? Under whose flag, these soldiers?"
"Mercenaries, lord. No flag but fortune for them. And the word was, there is coin aplenty for a freelance fighter in Cornwall. I have to be off. The king will need someone to whip for your lady's rude announcements."
"That doesn't seem fair," said Albany. He had a spark of decency in him, really, and somehow Goneril had not yet been able to smother it.
Plus, he seemed to have forgotten about accidentally hanging me.
"Don't worry for me, good Duke. You have worries of your own. Someone must take a hit for your lady. Let it be this humble fool.
Pray, tell her I said that someone must always hit it."
"Fare thee well, Duke."
And merrily I was off, bottom stinging, to let slip the dogs of war. Hi-ho! Lear sat on his horse outside Castle Albany, howling at the sky like a complete lunatic.
"May nature's nymphs bring great lobster-sized vermin to infest the rotted nest of a woman, Bits, and may serpents fix their fangs in her nipples and wave there until her poisoned dugs go black and drop to the ground like overripe figs."
I looked at Kent. "Built up a spot of steam, hasn't he?" said I.
"May Thor hammer at her bowels and produce flaming flatulence that wilts the forest and launches her off the battlements into a reeking dung heap."
"Not really adhering to any particular pantheon, is he?" said Kent.
"Oh, Poseidon, send your one-eyed son to stare into her bituminous heart and ignite it with flames of most hideous suffering."
"You know," said I, "the king seems to be leaning rather heavily on curses for someone with his unsavoury history with witches."
"Aye," said Kent, "seems to have steered his wrath toward the eldest daughter, if I'm not mistaken."
"Oh, you don't say," said I. "Sure, sure, that could be it, I suppose." We heard horses galloping, and I pulled Kent back from the drawbridge as two riders leading a train of 6 horses thundered across.
Oswald, said Kent.
With extra horses, said I, he's gone to Cornwall. Leah broke with cursing and watched the riders take out across the moor.
What business has that rascal in Cornwall?
He carries a message, Nuncle, said I. I heard Goneril order him to report her mind to her sister, and for Regan and her lord to go to Gloucester, and not be in Cornwall when you arrive.
Goneril, thou foul monstrous, said the king, clouting himself on the forehead.
Indeed, said I.
Oh, evil monstrous.
To be sure, said Kent.
Oh, pernicious monstrous, perfect in her perfidy.
Kent and I looked at each other, knowing not what to say.
I said, said Leah, most pernicious monstrous, perfect in her perfidy.
Kent mined a set of generous bosoms on himself and raised an eyebrow as if to ask, boobs? I shrugged as if to say, aye, boobs, sounds right.
Aye, most pernicious perfidy indeed, sire, said I. Aye. Most bouncy and jiggling perfidy, said Kent.
Then, as if coming out of a trance, Leah snapped to attention in his saddle.
You, Caius, have Curran saddle a fast horse for you. You must go to Gloucester. Tell my friend, the Earl, that we are coming.
Aye, my lord, said Kent. And Caius, see that my apprentice Drool comes to no harm, said I. Kent nodded and went back across the drawbridge. The old king looked down to me.
Oh, my pretty black fool. Where from fatherly duty did I stray that such ingratitude should rise in Goneril like mad fever?
I am only a fool, my lord. But making a guess, I'd say the lady may have in her delicate youth acquired more discipline to shape her character.
Speak plain, Pocket. I'll not hold harm against you.
You needed to smack the bitch up when she was tender, my lord. Instead, now you hand your daughters the rod and pull down your own breeches.
I'll have you flogged, fool.
His word is like the dew, said the puppet Jones, good only until put under light of day.
I laughed, simple fool that I am, no thought at all that Lear was becoming as inconstant as a butterfly. I need to speak to Curran and find a horse for the journey, sirrah, said I. I'll bring your cloak. Leah sagged in the saddle now, spent from his ranting.
Go, good Pocket. Have my knights prepare.
So I shall, said I, so I shall. I left the old man there alone outside the castle. XII. A King's Road. Having set the course of events in motion, I wonder now if my training to be a nun and my polished skills at telling jokes, juggling and singing songs fully qualify me to start a war. I've so often been the instrument of the whims of others, not even a pawn at court, merely an accoutrement to the king or his daughters, an amusing ornament, a tiny reminder of conscience and humanity, tempered with enough humour so it can be dismissed, laughed off, ignored. Perhaps there is a reason that there is no fool piece on the chessboard. What action a fool? What strategy a fool? What use a fool? Ah, but a fool resides in a deck of cards, a joker, sometimes two. Of no worth, of course, no real purpose. The appearance of a trump, but none of the power. Simply an instrument of chance. Only a dealer may give value to the joker. Make him wild, make him trump. Is the dealer fate? God? The king? A ghost? Witches? The anchoress spoke of the cards in the tarot, forbidden and pagan as they were. We had no cards, but she would describe them for me, and I drew their images on the stones of the antechamber in charcoal.
The fool's number is 0, she said, but that's because he represents the infinite possibility of all things. He may become anything. See, he carries all of his possessions in a bundle on his back. He is ready for anything, to go anywhere, to become whatever he needs to be. Don't count out the fool, Pocket, simply because his number is 0.
Did she know where I was heading, Or do her words only have meaning to me now, as I, the Zero, the Nothing, seek to move nations? War? I couldn't see the appeal. Drunk and dire of mood one night, Leah mused of war when I suggested that what he needed to cast off his dark aspect was a good wenching.
Oh, Pocket, I am too old, and the joy of a fuck withers with my limbs. Only a good killing can still boil lust in my blood, and one will not do either. Kill me 100, 1,000, 10,000 on my command, rivers of blood running through the fields. That's what pumps fire into a man's lance.
Oh, said I. I was going to fetch Shanker Mary for you from the laundry, but 10,000 dead and rivers of blood might be a bit beyond her talents, Majesty.
No, thank you, good Pocket. I shall sit and slide slowly and sadly into oblivion.
Or, said I could put a bucket on Drool's head and beat him with a sack of beets until the floor is spattered crimson while Shanker Mary gives you a proper tug to accentuate the gore.
No, fool. There is no pretending to war.
What's Wales doing, Majesty? We could invade the Welsh, perpetrate enough slaughter to raise your spirits, and have you back for tea and toast.
Wales is ours now, lad.
Oh, bugger. What's your feeling on attacking North Kensington, then?
Kensington's not a mile away. Practically in our own bailey.
Aye, Nuncle. That's the beauty of it. They'd never see it coming. Like a hot blade through butter we'd be. We could hear the widows and orphans wailing from the castle walls, like a horny lullaby for you.
I should think not. I'm not attacking neighbourhoods of London to amuse myself, Pocket. What kind of tyrant do you think me?
Oh, above average, sire. Well above bloody average.
I'll have you speak no more of war, fool. You've too sweet a nature for such dastardly pursuits.
Too sweet? Moi? Me thinks the art of war was made for fools, and fools for war. Kensington trembled that night. On the road to Gloucester, I let my anger wane, and tried to comfort the old king as best I could by lending him a sympathetic ear and a gentle word when he needed it. You simple, snivelling old toss-beast! What did you expect to happen when you put the care of your half-rotted carcass in the talons of that carrion bird of a daughter? I may have had some residual anger.
But I gave her half my kingdom.
And she gave you half the truth in return when she told you she loved you all. The old man hung his head, and his white hair fell in his face. We sat on stones by the fire. A tent was set in the wood nearby for the king's comfort, as there was no manor house in this northern county for him to take refuge. The rest of us would sleep outside in the cold.
"Wait, fool, until we are under the roof of my second daughter," said Leah. "Regan was always the sweet one. She will not be so shabby in her gratitude."
I had no heart to chide the old man any more. Expecting kindness from Regan was hope sung in the key of madness. Always the sweet one. Regan, I think not. My second week in the castle, I found young Regan and Goneril in one of the king's solars, teasing little Cordelia, passing a kitten the little one had taken a fancy to over her head, taunting her.
"Oh, come get the kitty," said Regan. "Be careful, lest it fly out the window."
Regan pretended she might throw the terrified little cat out of the window, and as Cordelia ran, arms stretched out to grab the kitten, Regan reeled and tossed the kitten to Goneril, who swung the kitten toward another window.
"Oh, look, Cordy, she'll be drowned in the moat, just like your traitor mother," said Goneril. "No!"
wailed Cordelia. She was nearly breathless from running sister to sister after the kitten. I stood in the doorway, stunned at their cruelty. The Chamberlain had told me that Cordelia's mother, Leah's third queen, had been accused of treason and banished 3 years before. No one knew exactly the circumstances of the crime, but there were rumours that she had been practising the old religion. Others that she had committed adultery. All the Chamberlain knew for sure was that the Queen had been taken from the tower in the dead of night, and from that time until my arrival at the castle, Cordelia had not uttered a coherent syllable.
"Drowned as a witch, she was," said Regan,
snatching the kitten out of the air. But this time the little kitten's claws found royal flesh.
"How, you little shit!"
Regan tossed the kitten out the window. Cordelia loosed an ear-shattering scream. Without thinking, I dived through the window after the cat and caught the braided cord with my feet as I flew through. I caught the kitten about 5 feet below the window as the cord burned between my ankles. Not having thought the move completely through, I hadn't counted on how to catch myself, kitten in hand, when the cord slammed me into the tower wall. The cord tightened around my right ankle. I took the impact on that shoulder and bounced while I watched my coxcomb flutter like a wounded bird to the moat below. I tucked the kitten into my doublet, then climbed back up the cord and in through the window. Lovely day for a constitutional, don't you think, ladies? The three of them all stood with their mouths hanging open. The older sisters had backed against the walls of the solar. You lot look like you could use some air, said I. I took the kitten from my doublet and held it out to Cordelia. Kitty's had quite an adventure. Perhaps you should take her to her mum for a nap. Cordelia took the kitten from me and ran out of the room.
We can have you beheaded, fool, said Regan, shaking off her shock. Any time we want, said Goneril, with less conviction than her sister.
Shall I send in a maid to tie back the tapestry, mum? I asked, with a grand wave to the tapestry I'd loosed from the wall when I leapt.
Yes, do that, commanded Regan. This instant, barked Goneril.
Right away, mum. And with a grin and a bow, I was gone from the room. I made my way down the spiral stairs, clinging to the wall, lest my heart gave out and sent me tumbling. Cordelia stood at the bottom of the stairs, cradling the kitten, looking up at me as if I were Jesus, Zeus, and St. George, all back from a smashing day of dragon-slaying. Her eyes were unnaturally wide, and she appeared to have stopped breathing.
Bloody awe, I suppose.
Stop staring like that, lamb. It's disturbing. People will think you've a chicken bone caught in your throat.
Thank you,
she said, with a great shoulder-shaking sob. I patted her head. You're welcome, love. Now run along. Pocket has to fish his hat from the moat and then go to the kitchen and drink until his hand stops shaking or he drowns in his own sick, whichever comes first. She backed away to let me pass, never taking her eyes from mine. It had been thus since the night I arrived at the tower, when her mind first crept out from whatever dark place it had been living before my arrival. Those wide, crystal blue eyes looking at me with unblinking wonder. The child could be right creepy.
Do not make yourself a maid to surprise Nuncle, said I.
I held the reins of my and the king's horse as they drank from an ice-laced stream some 100 miles north of Gloucester. Regan is a treasure, to be sure, but she may have the same mind as her sister. Although they will deny it, it's often been the case.
I cannot think it so, said the king. Regan will receive us with open arms.
There was a racket behind us, and the